Okay. All right, so yeah, our attitudes of sex. I think we sort of come into the world a bit like a blank canvas because we're born and then we wait it almost to be imprinted upon. And the question is, what do we get imprinted upon by? Well, yeah, families, that's where it's going to start. Whatever that family tends to be, obviously there are variations of that. You can have the nuclear family, or you know, you could be, you know, in care or whatever the case may be. But as a baby, yeah, you're born with this blank canvas, and then you start getting imprinted with ideas, and you pick them up either consciously or unconsciously. But your family tells you stuff, and that's when you start to formulate what you feel about sex in very subtle ways. So for me, lots of stuff I remember, abject humiliation. So for example, pet mother, you know, no sex before marriage. And when you do get married, you make sure you've been with that boy at least 2 years before you even think about it. And it was all very sort of puritanical, but I knew no better, and so that was fine. I was adhering to that. And I remember when I was probably about 8 or something like that, my father was obviously having a swagger moment. And I remember him saying, in front of, I've got two older brothers, and my mum and my dad was saying, God, every time I went into your mother's bedroom, she was pregnant. So I was like, all right. So I'm thinking, so you and mum have only had sex 3 times then. Well, of course, there was exactly that absolute hysterical laughing from my mother, from my father, from my brothers. And of course, it is amusing in retrospect to think of a kid saying that. But that was confusing for me. Why is that so funny? You know, sex is to have children. And it made no sense. And then my mother, around a similar time but on another occasion, let slip, good God, that she'd had sex with my father before they actually got married. And I remember being just, what? And she tried to cover up and backtrack it. Stephanie, no, that's not what I said. But of course, it was what she said. And so I didn't know what to make of it. So it's not so much that I grew up thinking sex was bad or negative in any way, but it was never spoken about. It was never natural. I don't know of my parents having sex, but I do remember sometimes hearing weird noises. And I would listen and I'm thinking, I don't know what that is. But I couldn't work it out. But I thought it must be sex, but I don't know. But, oh no, it can't possibly be. So it all
Obviously
felt quite
resting.
weird.
Yeah, you've seen that advert on the telly.
Yes, absolutely.
Take
Yes.
the butter and the toast, take it up to mum and dad on the Sunday morning, and mum and dad are wrestling.
Yeah. But you know, that's a very interesting point, in fact, because then you can get a child exactly who sees their parents having sex and can be really traumatized by it, because it can look as if the dad is attacking the mum, for example. Or vice versa, if they're having very passionate and vigorous sex. And then, yeah, very often nothing is said afterwards about it. And then the kid goes away and thinks, don't know what to make of that. So, yeah, no, that is wrestling, exactly. Yeah. And then, of course, yeah, tied into that, if sex is not spoken about, so the child grows up thinking certain things. So I'll give you an example. When I was teaching, I had a grade 9 class. So they were about 14. Now, I don't know how we got onto the topic of sex, and I don't know how, because I was meant to be an English and history teacher, but we got there and regularly did. Yeah, 14. That's what was on their mind. And I remember them saying something about parents don't have sex. And I just looked at them and said, do you realize that of course your parents still have sex? And they were like, oh God, ma'am, that's disgusting. How they don't? I said, they do. And I said, so You think, because they were, yeah, 14, so their parents would be around, let's say, 35-ish, round about there. So you think, I want you to remember this conversation, because when you hit 35, 40, you come back and tell me you're not interested in sex anymore. That you're that old, that really your sex has just dwindled. And they're like, oh God, that's like really ancient, obviously. But what was interesting about that was, yeah, first of all, exactly that. So when you've reached a certain age, that's it. You're sexually barren and not interested, and you just turn off, and it's icky. You just don't go there. So that's quite, you know, not a great message for a kid to grow up with. And secondly, that they actually think their parents don't. So that means their parents are not relaxed. And I'm not saying, obviously, everything's appropriate and age-appropriate, and you don't want your children or anyone around you to be uncomfortable with anything, but just that showing affection and innuendo that it's normal, that it's natural, that we in partnership, that we love each other, and sex is a part of that. So already that sex starts to sort of be something we don't talk about, really, you know. You have it, yeah, when you first get together, and yeah, when you want children, but yeah, so they don't grow up necessarily with it a part of their identity and something that's really important. Then obviously, so coming from culture, and every culture has a different take on it. My parents having sex, I can't imagine. Yeah, my son of 15 and he's obviously interested in sex, and he's had a girlfriend, and but it's illegal, Dylan. Don't even think about it yet. But yeah, and that happens, and fantastic. Yeah. And then culture, of course. Lots of myths and taboos can go around that, depending really on what culture you are in. For instance, in South Africa, which is quite scary, for example, there's one myth whereby if you have HIV, if you have sex with a virgin, then that will cure you of HIV. And of course, the terrible thing about that is, how do you know who's a virgin and who isn't? And so lots, well, I don't want to say lots, but you know, reported cases then of babies being raped, for instance, because you know they're virgins. So things get passed on, and that comes through, yeah, peer pressure as well, and peer ideas and concepts. And I'm going to talk a bit about that later, because I do want to devote a section to teenagers, and I think of what's happening with them these days. It is quite a scary world that they're in. So yeah, so that. Any comments, by the way, on any of those things where, you know, from culture or peers or family? Okay. I'll give you a little chance a bit later to sort of have a little chat, you know, with somebody next to you or something on these few pointers that I'm going to give you at the moment. Yeah, so we get these attitudes then from our childhood, and it depends what's being fed back to you. But if it's not necessarily a positive message, then you can end up in the state of confusion or even fear, or depends what's being said to you. So my life, if you get messages like, you were a mistake, I love you, you're the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life, I'm so glad I had you, but you were a mistake, I didn't plan for you. So what sits with you then, all your life? Or, I wasn't planning to get pregnant, it was your bloody father's fault. That's no good either, because that's also giving off a message that is not very comfortable. Or, I do love you, but God, I really wanted a boy. Or, I was really hoping for a little girl, my last one, but I do love you, but I really wanted something else. Again, what does that leave you with? And I think, yeah, why sex is so important to think about, because if you do have children, You are raising a potential husband or wife or partner or a sexual being. And that's why that last point there, I feel quite strongly about it, that if we have children, we try supposedly as best we can to take care of them with, let's say, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, So you feed them and keep them warm and make sure they're healthy and, you know, attend to their basic needs. Try and make sure they go to school and they learn and you raise them to be independent and to go out into the world and stand on their own two feet and be a good solid citizen, let's say, of the community. But I take quite seriously with my son the concept of his sex life or sexuality one day is part of his upbringing. And I do that obviously in very subtle ways, such that he's comfortable with it. But I remember my eldest brother, he was 4 years older than me. He was excruciatingly embarrassed about anything to do with sex that I found fascinating. So he'd be watching television and a couple were just kissing and he'd go bright red. And I remember thinking, I wonder why he's doing that. And that feels really odd. And then I was thinking, a bit irritated, would you bloody well sit down? Because sometimes he'd walk out the room and I'd be like, I was quite enjoying that and out and that's not nice. So I was half irritated by him, but I was confused by it. So I was thinking, is something happening there that's not right? And so I didn't understand it. So with my son, I've always been quite open about sex because I think if I want him to grow up to be a polite, respectful, loving young man that hopefully everyone will say, oh, what a great kid you've got, that's wonderful. But I want that to translate into a sexual identity as well. I don't want him to be with a young girl one day and not treat her with respect behind closed doors. I think it needs to translate. I want him to feel good about his body, because if he's got good self-esteem and feels okay about who and what he is, then that's going to translate as well to when he's with somebody. And I talk about shame a bit later and how that can impact one's sex life. And so, yeah, I feel quite strongly that, yeah, we take responsibility for our children in all sorts of ways, but not necessarily in the sexual way. And I do think that's just a part of it as well.